Three items in this division of chemical and mental health: establishing a clinical care coordination benefit in Medicaid, establishing a family psychoeducation benefit, and adjusting the ARMS provision rate. We had quite a lengthy discussion about that, but I do know that there were a couple of testifiers who wished to testify on those. So before we get to the next items, maybe we could open it up for testimony on any of those first three topics that we covered. It might be helpful for members that need for members of the public that might need to get on to other things, work and
certainly,
the like.
Certainly, Senator Lurie. And you, did you have some testifiers?
I haven't organized them, but I've been made aware that some are available. So if you just opened it up, I think they'll probably
okay.
come forward.
Anybody who would like to testify on the first three that we have covered? Senator Holden?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Sue Abderholden representing NAMI Minnesota, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning about the mental health provisions in the governor's budget and, of course, adding our support for the other mental health bills that were heard today. The governor's budget does attempt to address a few of the problems in our mental health system, but I will say that mostly it's due to repurposing of funds. Basically, we take money from one part of the mental health system to fix another. I feel like we're the little Dutch boy sticking our fingers in whatever hole in the dike has the largest amount of water flowing out of it. The increase in the school-linked mental health grants is really where we see true new investments in our children's mental health system. And if you add psychoeducation and clinical care coordination, you will help stretch our school-linked grants even more, since we'll have MA dollars and Minnesota Care dollars and not grant dollars funding those activities. About 45% of the children who receive school-linked mental health services are on MA or Minnesota Care. You can put all the dollars you want into our education system, but if you don't treat a child's mental illness, they are not going to do well in school. Think of the symptoms: inability to focus, lethargic, can't pay attention to details, agitation, highly distractible, hallucinations. And if we don't treat these children, we see poor outcomes, such as high rates of suspension, truancy, early alcohol or drug abuse, frequent encounters with the criminal justice system, and we see high usage of more costly treatments such as hospitalization or residential treatment. We will pay one way or another, but how much better for the child, their family, and our communities if we fund early intervention where they are, at school. This is truly one of the best programs we have in Minnesota, and we need to increase our investments. Increased funding for crisis services is also included, so we can try to make this a statewide program. You will hear testimony soon as to the effectiveness of this program, how it prevents more costly hospitalizations and keeps people in their homes. I do just want to make a short pitch for focusing on those young adults experiencing their first psychotic episode. We can achieve cost savings by not allowing this illness to become disabling and by supporting them in such a way that the trajectory of their life is not greatly altered. Most people know me as an optimist. I think I have that little engine that could mentality. Every year I come over here believing that we can make progress in strengthening our mental health system. But I have to say that this month my hopes have been dashed. Several of you stood with me earlier in the session at a press conference where we talked about the need to improve our fragile children's mental health system, about the importance of early intervention, and about this was the year to finally address this very important issue. We've had over 12 bills introduced to address the children's mental health system, and we focused on housing and employment for adults with mental illnesses. The governor's budget is pretty lean when it comes to restoring cuts and making new investments, but at least school-linked grants and crisis services were increased, and for that we are thankful. But I have to say, and I'm sorry, but the target set by the Senate leadership, and I know it's not on the table, but I can't help myself, truly has left me feeling dismayed and frankly hopeless. We've worked hard to bring you data about the effectiveness and the cost savings. We've worked hard to bring you the personal stories of those impacted. We've worked hard to help you understand the problems in our system and the solutions. But nothing can be done if dollars are cut from this budget. At a NAMI event back in February, I told people that this was the year we were going to see great things happen for children with mental illnesses and their families, and that if we couldn't get it done this year, I would give up. Well, I won't give up, but I will admit that my heart is heavy. Heavy with the knowledge that the struggles faced by these children and families to access basic treatment and supports will continue if leadership doesn't change the Health and Human Services targets. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Afterholden.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify today in support of clinical care consultation in children's mental health.
Could you please state your name?
My name is Alma Marquez, and I am a school-based therapist with the Wilder Foundation here in St. Paul.
Thank you.
Every day I work with children and families with complex emotional and behavioral issues. These are the citizens your legislation will most directly impact, and I'm here to speak about how the proposed legislation that includes mental health care coordination and clinical case consultation will impact children and adolescents in our community. Therapists and providers can't just work with children in a vacuum. In order to do our jobs well, therapists need to actively communicate with many people, including primary care doctors, psychiatrists, family members, and school staff. We do this to put the best services in place for the child, and we stay connected to prevent relapse and deterioration. This year, I am working in an innovative service created by a partnership between Wilder Foundation and St. Paul Schools. I deliver mental health care at an elementary school with the expectation that I spend as much time doing care coordination and clinical case consultation that each child needs. This is a luxury that therapists do not have, as those are not billable activities. One result of this pilot is that I am seeing children stabilize in shorter time frames and experience success in less intense services. I'd like to share one of these examples with you. In September, I met a 6-year-old first grade boy who the classroom teacher referred for services because of high risk behavior, like running out of class, jumping flights of stairs, and banging his head against cement walls. An assessment with his mother revealed a history of traumatic experiences, extreme risk behaviors at home as well, abnormal sleep patterns, and extreme prenatal exposure to drugs and alcohol. In addition, the child was in significant emotional distress, both at home and school, and at times he was attempting and intending to hurt himself. It was clear that this child was in critical need of more intensive services, and my outpatient therapy was not going to be enough. It took many hours of clinical case consultation with psychiatric hospital staff and day treatment providers to find a location that had space for this child at his age range and in his neighborhood. We did not find one in his neighborhood. We had to have more consultation time to be able to help that family get through the hoops, understanding the diagnosis and understanding the level of care that that child was going to need. And finally, he was admitted to a hospital and later to a day treatment program. After starting the program, consistent and regular consultation with the team of psychiatrists, psychologists, nurses, teachers, therapists at his day treatment center helped me prepare services and supports for him back home in his community. When he finished the program a month later, he returned to school. His psychiatric medication was provided by the school nurse. The classroom teacher had the same crawling tunnel that he used in day treatment to take quiet breaks when he became stressed. His teacher was prepared with the language and strategies for coaching his emotional regulation. And the school social worker had already prepared a plan for completing his evaluation for special education supports. We were matched with a Ramsey County case manager for ongoing support with the family on appointments and care needs. And I was able to pick up where his therapist at day treatment left off, knowing exactly where he was in the process. This family had never known a child with significant mental health issues. They were unfamiliar with the system and the language. This parent told me she could not have remembered or communicated the important details of his symptom expression or his care needs to all the providers that she met with. As a therapist with weekly contact with him and his mother, I had the rare opportunity to link this child's care providers in consistent communication. The clinical care consultation with other providers allows children to have all of the adults in their world on the same page. They know what works for them, what triggers them, what helps and supports their successful and safe development, making modifications to services and needs as they grow and mature. Prior to the start of this unique pilot program, I worked as a therapist in the traditional capacity at COFI Services at Wilder Foundation. Without the opportunity, the ability, or the time to focus on care coordination and clinical case consultation. As providers, we can do better in delivering mental health services to children and families, and supporting the ability for service providers to participate in care coordination and clinical case consultation is a powerful way to do that. I hope you support the important legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Marquez. Any questions for the testifier? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Kevin Woyon, to the chair and the members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify. I'm here to speak about the expansion of mental health crisis services for adults. I would add for children, but I understand the bill in its current form addresses only funding for adult mental health crisis. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in the state of Minnesota. I'm also the executive director for Riverwood Centers, an agency that provides mental health crisis services for Region 7E, which is inclusive of Chisago, Isani, Mille Lacs, Kennebec, and Pine Counties. We've been providing adult mental health crisis services for about almost 8 years now. By all accounts, with our community stakeholders, we have a very high rate of quality in hospital diversion. I'll talk more about what that means in terms of dollars and cents later in my presentation. We often meet people in crisis at some of the worst possible times in their lives. We meet them when they're considering suicide or they're severely depressed. We meet them when their anxiety is inconsolable and they believe they're having a heart attack and they have to go to the hospital. We meet them when their behavior is out of control and they've damaged their relationships, sometimes beyond repair, at school or at work or with a partner or other family members or supports in the community. We meet them when they are having delusions and hallucinations that dissuade them from accessing the very care that they need. We meet them when their family and friends in the community have exhausted their capacity to help the individual. And we are the safety net, not just in terms of finance of health care, but in very real terms, we are the safety net that catches them and helps to determine, do they need to go to a hospital or can we work with them in the community to help them stabilize? That's the essence of what we do. Our first step is screening and assessment. I'm not here today just to speak about the good work that our crisis teams do. I'm here to speak about the fiscal value that they represent and why expansion of the network of providers would be money smartly spent. Prior to the existence of our crisis services network, people in mental health crisis would often present at a hospital emergency room, some arriving by ambulance, and some cases would result in either a subsequent transport to another hospital or psychiatric unit or a hospital stay at the first receiving hospital. By contrast, crisis services teams intervene with people facing mental health crisis in the community. We're able to intervene early, often long before an ambulance call, an emergency room visit, or a hospital admission becomes necessary. Our teams provide assessment to each person to determine the nature and the severity of their crisis. We determine the most effective course of action, and 90% of the time, we are able to help our clients stabilize in the community instead of entering the revolving door of an emergency room. Now, this isn't to say that emergency rooms are not an important part of the mental health service in our state, but it is to say that, and I believe emergency department providers would agree, that when someone enters their doors unnecessarily and can be treated by at least less invasive means, that's a smart approach to client care. In 2012, our crisis teams served 612 adults and 103 children in crisis. These people from Region 7E could have posed more than $1.5 million worth of costs related to psychiatric care using the old hospital-based system. The crisis services team provide effective stabilization at a cost per episode that is only a fraction of the costs incurred when a client is administered to the hospital. And in terms of a system-wide cost of care, it's right around $700,000 a year. To be clear, I'm not urging that emergency room and the hospital system of care for psychiatric patients is unnecessary. To the contrary, of the 10% of people that we cannot provide care for in the community because it's too risky, their symptoms are too severe, and in that moment they're not capable of stabilizing their symptoms in the community, for that 10%, the hospital is the place for them to go. But for that other 90%, we can and do provide care in the community and help them to stabilize where they're at. for the 90% that crisis services can provide care for. It's a cost-effective alternative. It keeps services in the community and keeps the hospitals free to serve the more intensive clients. It also keeps police officers, ambulance services in their local area rather than being tied up with a transport of a psychiatric client to a hospital. If you extrapolate our care to the rest of the system, our statewide network of providers save the healthcare system as a whole millions of dollars each year in reduction of fees charged directly to medical assistants and some of the fees that are charged directly back to the counties for unfunded care. Expansion of the network to reach more counties and increasingly rural communities. It saves lives, it saves money, and provides more effective care to people in crisis. I thank you for your time and attention to this matter, and I would be happy to entertain any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Quillian. I appreciate your testimony. And is there any questions from our members? And I should say, it is a little sparse around the table. It's getting better, but there is a lot going on today. So there's other committees being heard and meeting, and so that we have members going back and forth. But thank you, Mr. Quillian.
Thank you.
Page. Senator Lori, another testifier?
Looks like it.
What page are we on? I don't know if we've talked about the mental health specialty service. Is that...
That's coming up next.
To adjust.
Go ahead. This will be a preview for
okay.
the upcoming topic. Maybe we'll okay. just lead into it with the public testimony.
Okay. Part. Thank you, Senator. My name is Kitty Weston, and I really appreciate you allowing me this opportunity to come and talk to you today. I'm here to bring in the voice of the thousands and thousands of people in Minnesota who struggle with mental illness, and I'm here to bring in the voice of the people who die of suicide every 15 minutes in the United States. And I'm here to bring in the voice of the over 500 people who die every year in Minnesota by suicide. And mostly I'm here to bring in the voice of my daughter, Anna, who died at age 21 by suicide because she could not get the care she needed. But most importantly, I'm here to urge you to talk with you about changing the budget targets that will result in cutting specialty services and programs, including the mental health specialty service that is a service that will save lives. So there are people with mental illnesses that are so complex that stabilization and treatment can take months or even years. My daughter was one of those. What happens to a person that has a very serious and complicated diagnosis that impacts them medically, psychologically, and socially? And what happens to the person who suffers from a mental illness when it's combined with chronic medical conditions, substance abuse, or maybe even aggressiveness? And my daughter struggled with an eating disorder, and she was one of those people who had a very serious mental illness and also had extremely serious, even life-threatening medical complications. So when a person with such a diagnosis decompensates, for example, a psychotic episode or a major depressive episode or a serious and life-threatening eating disorder, oftentimes that person needs to go to the hospital. And they need to be there for a period of time for medical stabilization and to also address the mental health needs. But at some point, that level of care is no longer necessary. And that level of care can cost anywhere from over $1,000 to up to $2,000 to be in a hospital bed. In cases when the illness is so complex and it's complicated by medical conditions, when it's time to discharge, it may not be the right choice to discharge that person back into the community, into their home, or even to a residential treatment program that does not offer medical treatment. And Discharge into one of those settings is pretty typical for somebody struggling or for somebody leaving the hospital after some kind of a mental health issue. Well, without other options, what happens is those folks end up staying in the hospital, and sometimes for very long periods of time, which is really very, very expensive. And it means that that person is not being treated in the least restrictive environment. So for lots of reasons, that's not the best choice. So to address some of these unusual cases, Department of Health and Human Services has been talking for years about establishing what they call mental health specialty treatment service. And basically, what a mental health specialty treatment service is a medically monitored residential program. And when our daughter was very ill with her eating disorder, there was no such thing as a residential level of care for eating disorders in Minnesota. And I'm proud to say that we were able to establish residential service in Minnesota after she died. And it's called the Anna Weston House. So that provides that level of care. And there's people now with severe eating disorders that are getting that level of care that they need in a residential setting. Providing that mid-level of care between being in the hospital and being in a non-medical residential program will actually save money, and because it reduces the total number of days the person would have to stay in a hospital setting, and it's also providing the necessary treatment that will prevent the person from needing to return to the hospital. It's another example of one of the great safety nets that our most challenged and our most challenging people who suffer from eating disorders need. So programs such as the Mental Health Specialty Treatment Service and all the other programs we're talking about today are so cost-effective for many reasons, and cutting them is just plain going in the wrong direction. The mental health system has been cut drastically for 4 years, even though we know that providing good mental health services is cost-effective. And we also know that cutting mental health services and programs results in poor outcomes, including loss of jobs, homelessness, substance disorders, and tragically, even death. So please consider the words written by my daughter Anna just days before she died of suicide. "My life is worthless right now. Saying goodbye to such an unfriendly place can't be as hard as believing in it every day. And essentially, my spirit has fled already." You can hear the pain and the hopelessness in those words. And had she had access to the appropriate level of care, I think she'd be here with me today. The cost of inadequately treating a mental illness for Anna was her life. The cost of inadequately treating a mental illness for our family is almost unbearable and unspeakable grief. And the cost to our society is the loss of a highly intelligent young woman who could have achieved great things and made impressive contributions to our society had she lived. So I ask you, I implore you, to please rethink the proposal to cut $150 million from the health and human services budget. It will save lives. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Weston. I'm very sorry about your loss, and I'm amazed you got through that. So thank you for your testimony.
You.
If there's any questions from the committee for Ms. Weston, well, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Well, and
Senator Lurie?
The stories we hear are incredibly difficult to hear, and it really highlights the importance of the work that we do here. I think that, you know, we got a preview on a couple of issues that we have yet to come up. And I just, you know, whoever's listening, I want to assure that we take this very, very seriously. Ms. Abderholden's heavy heart, everyone's heavy heart is felt in a very, very real sense in this committee, and we're not going to give up either. And I think that's the message that was asked of us. And one of the things that I have been saying is that what we have is a target. And it is just that. It is a target. And I'm working every day to carry the messages that we hear in our committee to try to make it understood that we really aren't going to be able to put together a bill with this target. We really need to do a little bit better by the lives of people affected by the Health and Human Services budget, and so we're working on that. I know that they're good people in charge of these decisions. I have faith we're going to do a little bit better.
I'm putting my money on you, Senator Lori.
Thank you. Well, with that, maybe we will get Mr. Hartford back up to the table and continue and hear about the mental health specialty treatment service and its details. We've now heard about the difference it could make. We'll hear the details of the proposal.
Madam Chair.
Oh, yes, Senator Kitmar.
Thank you. I really apologize. It's really hard to be in two committees, and you get the stream of things going and the good testifiers. So also you miss out on some of the plans of the committee. And I have this chart here. Has this been gone over yet? Did I miss it?
Madam Chair,
looks
Senator
like bonding
Kiffmeyer,
projects, maybe?
That looks like a piece that was on another bill that was covered. Whose bill was that? We did cover that one. That was had to do with the level of funding for mental health home, okay. housing
right.
services.
Right.
And we heard that bill and laid it on the table for possible inclusion already.
All right.
I believe that was a Senator Sharon bill, was it not? I don't know.
What's the Senator Sharon?
Is it not? Which one?
Okay. Okay, Senator Eaton. Right.
That's right. It was a Senator Eaton bill.
Right.
That is correct. Thank you.
Right.
That was heard early on
right.
this morning and has been laid on the table for possible inclusion. So with that, maybe we'll move to the mental health specialty treatment service.
That's budget page 83.
Budget
members.
Page 83. It's Article 4, Sections 4 and 5. In the, if people want to dig into the 500 pages.
Mr. Hartford.
Madam Chair. First, I'd like to thank the excellent testimony that we just received. They really laid out some of the issues around some of the topics I'm going to address here. And just as a segue, I think for everyone to continue to remember the topic of suicide, that for children between the ages of 10 and 16, it's the number three cause of death. And for overall population, the 10th leading cause of death. And as we get into just the level of seriousness really around these healthcare issues. But to talk a little bit about this bill, the mental health specialty treatment, it's been recognized in Minnesota for a block of time now that we have a gap in our delivery system between inpatient hospital care and our residential care, as the last testimony laid out, that we have a gap in services there. This bill begins to pilot what is referred to as a 24/7 medically monitored environment. Because what happens is, because we don't have this level of care in Minnesota, people stay in inpatient units beyond how long they need to stay in a hospital. They don't need that hospital level of care any longer. So they start to just stay in our most expensive psychiatric services and kind of stack up there because they're not safe to move to another level. So at Anoka Regional Treatment Center and in other hospitals, we're expending and wasting this valuable crisis service that we have of inpatient hospital beds. So this proposal really is about our residential services piloting another level of care, and this $2 million in the biennium is to fund the incremental cost in services to medically monitor individuals in a residential setting. So we're moving down the road in terms of developing this service. It was a concept in another bill, Senator Sharon's bill earlier this morning, that referenced psychiatric residential treatment for children. It's a similar concept in that it's a higher level of service. It's a gap in our current system. the measure of success in this, because we know we have at Anoka Regional Treatment Center as many as 50 to 60 people on any given day that aren't meeting hospital level of care. Measure of success would be reducing that number in these pilots.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hartford. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so this is an additional $1 million to what size population? You said 60?
There's, at any given time, it depends on the exact parameters, but at any given time, at the highest level of need, 50 to 60 patients across the state at any given time that could really benefit from this service.
Okay, and is the million is in addition to something we're already paying for? Is this a temporary bump to build some infrastructure and find facilities? I know there was an RFI going out related to some of this.
Madam Chair, Senator.
Mr. Hartford.
You're correct in that we currently have funding and a Medicaid benefit around intensive residential services. This is meant to be additional services as we pilot and develop this service, because it has not been that the service model has not been developed in Minnesota. So that's really what this is to develop, and that the one RFP that went out is around a new service model. So this $1 million a year would be to supplement what does an ERTS level need in order to monitor and to move to a higher level of service.
Sam Betts.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Hartford, I guess what I'd be looking for then is some tail off once this is established, but we've got level funding here. So if this is for development of the program, I'd expect to see a drop. If this is a sustained need, then it doesn't look like we're actually saving money by taking somebody out of an institution and making beds available. So I'm just trying to figure out where the money's moving. It's $1 million, and in the big scheme of the budget, it's not huge. But I want to make sure we're honing in on we're building a program that serves needs at a reasonable cost for a population that no longer needs to be in an institution, is ready to transition. Help me out here a little.
Madam Chair, Senator, as soon as you move one patient out of that inpatient level into this level, mm-hmm. you've saved money. So they are moving into this is, even with the supplemental funding, this is a lower level of care than the hospital bed that they would have been in. So you start to receive your savings. So there's a measurement there. And I think out of these pilots, we'll come to understand better, do we need to apply for a federal waiver around another level of care, a psychiatric residential level of care, or what do we need to do next to have that long-term sustainable funding? Because these are pilots.
Yes. And Madam Chair, Mr. Hartford, so are somewhere we're going to see a little bit of savings, or we're too early and that might happen in the tails?
Mr. Hartford.
Madam Chair, Senator, you would see the savings in the first year, because if you took the savings from hospital days into this level, you'd see it immediately.
I don't see that number, and so I need a little help.
Senator Lurie.
I think the reason you don't see it is because when we free up a bed at one of these facilities, that bed is needed by somebody else, and they'll fill that bed, so we're not seeing the savings from that bed. The savings is as applied to the individual who's moving, and is my understanding, and we're building a new service to transition people and shorten the length of stay, but the bed that they're moving out of is desperately needed by somebody else in the community, and that's why, that's my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's why we don't see the savings on this. I mean, we have a significantly underfunded mental health system, people in the community desperately needing this high, really hospital level of care, and people in this high hospital level of care that are staying longer than they would have to, because there isn't this community-based level of care, but with some additional services in it. So it's going to be a lower level of care for those that are ready for discharge into something that doesn't exist. But we're not going to see a savings because we have so many needs that somebody else is going to fill the bed that was freed up by shortening that length of stay.
So, Madam Chair, it sounds like a capacity increase.
It's a capacity increase is how I would look at it, yes.
Okay. And hopefully we can move some mentally ill people out of jails and into a secure facility where they can get treatment. And so is this the path we're going down?
Okay.
All right. That's how I would characterize it, Madam Chair, Senator Benson, more than, yeah.
Madam Chair, Senator, likewise, this is really around constrictions and the flow of patients through our system, and we can see that we're pooling people in the most expensive levels today. So this is a small, there's a constriction here where we know we don't have this level of care that clogs the whole system, so more expensive beds are being utilized.
Senator Sharon?
But those beds will be utilized because there's the backup. The other backup is in the psychiatric hospital, the traditional hospital that might have a psychiatric unit. It's not designed for this particular, but there's no bed to transfer them to at Anoka, so they sit there, cost the hospital. Staffing levels are not prepared to manage this. So the whole system is backed up. So this is starting to build a system that can move it out. So the hospitals might see some savings, but the state system is still operating.
And Mr. Hartford, what is that? What do you mean in the first paragraph? The proposal, blah blah blah, receipts earned that are not currently dedicated to another purpose. Can you explain what that means? That the.
Treatment services. Reallocating a portion of the state-operated services, intensive.
If I'm not mistaken, that fund is there are other commitments to that fund. I guess I can't answer that this time.
Actually, I think maybe Mr. Albrecht will give him.
Madam Chair and Senator Lurie, this is one of a number of governor's proposals. I believe there are three of them that take money that is currently in a dedicated account that has a mechanism to put money into it, but no mechanism to take money out of it. And the governor is basically creating a list of ways to take money out of that fund.
Mr. Albrecht, do we know how much money is in that dedicated fund?
Madam Chair, my understanding is that currently there is about $3 million a year that's going into that fund.
Senator Lurie.
That has been my understanding as well, is that these were revenues generated because these are partially charged for, these ERTS level of service, and so there's been revenues going in, and this is allocating those revenues to build this model and a couple of others we'll see.
Okay. Great. Any other further questions from the committee? Okay. Mr. Hartford, mental health care treatment permitted in foster care, please.
This bill, budget page 122, this is about a concept that was actually passed in 2005 and made part of the base forecast in 2006. The concept here is that there are children that are in foster care who have mental health needs. It's been identified this population of children, and there's a special package that to address the mental health needs. We have an estimate of about 742 children in Minnesota today in foster care more than 30 days that have had two or more inpatient crisis day treatment or residential episodes in the past year. That's really so. These are children who clearly have a need for mental health services. It's estimated the length of service would be 6 months for this package of services for these children. Because this was forecasted in 06 and never implemented, this got caught up in a number of different budget exercises over the years, and this has now been the service package. Our language adjusts the service package slightly with some newer concepts that we have just developed in the last few years. readjusts the forecast that, and the forecast reflects actually a savings now of $231,000 in the first year and a total biennium cost of $161,000.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hartford. Any questions? Senator Lurie, comments?
Maybe I hate to ask questions about my own bill, I guess, but,
but
my understanding was the savings are actually generated from a further delay of actually implementing this, and then when it's finally implemented, it will have the cost, and that's why I was confused about this for some time as I watched it, and then you see a cost appear in 2017. I think that we're still, again, this was a something that was decided was of value back in 2005 or for to start in 2006, and then it was not able to be implemented, and it was put off, and we would have seen budget savings like this when we put it off, but it was kept on the table and moved down, just postponed the effective date, and I think that we've postponed the effective date again, but also made some adjustments so that when it is effective, it'll be available in more foster care homes than was there. So I believe that's the manner it works out in the way I've read it.
Mr. Hartford?
And Madam Chair, my assumption is also there's the just rollout time involved as how long does it take to actually get the service packages rolled out, and so there, so it would increase over time from the first few years. And I would,
okay.
And that was what the assumption, though the assumptions were built on that.
So
Senator Lurie?
Madam Chair, Mr. Hartford, would it actually be provided in these foster care homes in 2014, or would it not start until 2017?
It'll start by the end of 14.
Okay.
I'm sorry,
Chair,
what was that?
It would start by the end of 14.
End of 14. Okay. Okay. Senator Lurie? Mr. Hartford, anything else? Members? Questions? Comments? Super.
Okay.
On to expansion of the school link grants, child mental health grants, and page 73.
Madam Chair and members, I take note that this is one that we've discussed at length already, even today, so maybe we can abbreviate this testimony. The governor's package is really a bit smaller than the one that was presented by Senator Sharon earlier, smaller dollar number, and not quite as many enhancements, bells and whistles, as it were, but this is one that we've discussed many times, and so we'll discuss it one more time here. But
Mr. Hartford?
And, Madam Chair, as Senator Lurie says, this has been discussed well earlier. The governor's budget asked for a doubling of the current capacity, moving from 17% to 34% of school districts having this service. The measurables that we're looking for out of this is an increased number of students served, increased number of schools providing school linked, and also an increase in the number of cultural minority students served. $7.4 million for the biennium to accomplish that. And again, this is clearly one of the investments that as the department took a look at return, again, on my concept of what's the return. Early intervention we know for these kids are ineffective. This is an effective route in order to reach children earlier in their own environment, where if you think about the barriers that children may receive in getting mental health care, in order to get to an appointment, parents have to take off work, get children, get them to the appointments, in addition to all the other barriers. The other thing to consider in these school link grants is most of this, many of the services are reimbursable services under health care. This grant is really around the gap that our current system doesn't provide, so with that in mind. And again, $7.4 million in the biennium.
Senator Lurie, I'm going to ask Mr. Albrecht if he could just give us the differences between Senator Sharon's bill and numbers and the governor's proposal.
$270.
Senator Sharon's bill is just slightly under $10 million, if I recall correctly.
It was 9.2.
It's just money.
It was 9.4.
Yeah.
It's
just, yeah.
Of course, we get to revisit that. Yeah, $10 million.
Okay.
It's just a little
it's a rounding. Yeah. And I would assume the breakdown is very similar, Mr. Hartford, as far as...
Madam Chair, there were additional services provided in Senator Sharon's budget, the consultation components, and others may be able to speak better, but there were other, it was a broader broader approach to school link grants for the additional dollars.
Senator Sharon, anything, any comments?
Which is why we should fund my
Okay. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is the current funding? And I'm sorry if it's in here somewhere. What is the current funding?
It's 4.
Mr. Hartford?
Madam Chair, $4.7 million at this point.
Let me per biennium?
Madam Chair, Senator Benson, that is the base funding of school link mental health grants, yes.
Okay, so we would be approximately doubling?
Yes. The Madam Chair, Senator Benson, the governor's proposal was essentially to double the school-linked mental health grants.
And Madam Chair, and perhaps Mr. Hartford, you can help me. We're adding two FTEs. How many people are currently in this department?
Mr. Hartford.
Madam Chair, Senator, there's currently one FTE managing the grants as we stand today.
Thank you, Mr. Hartford. I'm just trying to keep focused on getting this out to the schools and to the kids, so I just want a concept of what this environment looks like. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any other questions? And Senator Laurie, there's a few of us that have to take off here fairly soon, so perhaps we could speed this up.
Sure. We'll try. You know, the next one, expand mental health crisis response services. We
Sorry.
Also got
Sorry.
We got some testimony on this one already earlier to talk about the need for this. Governor's change, page 79, Mr. Hartford.
Mr. Hartford.
Madam Chair, again, this is to expand our mobile crisis teams. These are the mobile teams that we had excellent testimony earlier concerning the need and how the mobile teams operate. With that in mind, we currently have mobile teams in 59 counties for children, 49 for adults, and one tribe. This is asking for $2 million investment in the biennium to start four more teams that would cover 16 more counties and two tribes. So a continued expansion. And again, this is an investment item where we do not have coverage statewide. And as we continue to know that this is a service that meets people in their homes, does follow-up for the families, keeps people out of emergency rooms, and so we don't have law enforcement doing mental health as much as the only responder to mental health crisis in the community.
Senator Benson.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Hartford, why the $500,000 drop in the second biennium?
Mr. Hartford.
It's from $250,000 a year more.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Benson.
Not a huge issue. I'm just wondering if there's some structural change going on. We can deal with this as we go forward.
We'll get an answer for that.
I believe you will, Senator Laurie. Thank you.
This is 3.5.
We'll Mr. Hartford.
Yeah. Madam Chair.
And Senator Laurie, the only reason
Madam
I said
Chair,
that is
I
that Senator Sharon and myself have meetings at once, so I didn't mean to be rude about there goes your committee pretty much.
In just 1 minute, we'll get back to you.
Oh, that's great. Well, you know what? Maybe we can just move on to substance abuse screening, brief intervention.
Yeah.
Page 85, would that be okay?
Yes.
Senator Laurie?
Yes.
Madam Chair, this is concerning education for our primary care clinicians around substance abuse screening, brief intervention, referral to treatment, commonly known as SBIRT. This is an evidence-based practice concerning substance abuse. And again, this is a step in the direction of having our healthcare delivery system do earlier screening or identification, appropriate brief intervention in a primary care setting, and referral to other deeper services if those are required. The funding for this, $300,000 a year for one time for the biennium, $600,000.
And Mr. Hartford, then you don't need any more funding for training or for recruitment or?
This is just
a one-time.
Training of primary care providers so that they integrate that into their care settings and do this screening, and then it's a screening brief intervention, and then a referral to treatment. And once it's been integrated, it's self-sustaining from that point. I mean, it is a very evidence-based. I've been to national conferences where this is talked about as one of the very most effective tools to just make that initial identification early and be able to, you know, identifying these issues is one of the core things that we need to do. And if you get them early, you can provide those proper interventions and preclude, dive into these difficult issues that people struggle with and prevent a lot of the trouble that we see further down the road.
Cost savings down the road, exactly. Senator Benson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Training would reach 8 primary care clinics or community groups per region. How many for the state?
Mr. Hartford?
8 regions, isn't there?
Madam Chair, I'll take Senator Lurie's. I don't know that off the top.
Senator Lurie?
I think there's 8 regions that are considered here, but I could be mistaken.
So,
Madam Chair,
one
of the staff says 8.
So 64 primary care clinics. Thank you, Madam Chair. I hate to say this, but this seems like a small number. Is this going to have an impact hitting 64 clinics in the state of Minnesota? So I'm not advocating one way or the other. I just want to be sure that if we're going to drop 50 cents when we should be dropping a dollar, I'm trying to understand if this is going to be effective.
Madam Chair, Senator, we're also working with the health plans and also with the ICSI organization. So we're trying to leverage this in as many ways as possible. We also are working with the Department of Safety to leverage some dollars in this effort, too. So we're trying to bridge as many avenues as possible in order to get enough synergy, if you will, around getting a practice change.
Any questions with that? Great. Senator Lurie.
Back to item 79. Do we have an explanation for the drop from $1 million per year to $750,000 per year? That's the last remaining item I know.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Hartford.
I can't really understand it. So I would get back to anyone.
We'll have that distributed to members.
I'm just not used to seeing numbers drop off. Usually they go up.
Okay. And Senator Lurie, your wishes?
Well, there's
Mr.
no
Chair?
Motion. We just lay this on the table.
Okay.
We'll pick it up again at the next hearing and go through the next bunch of items. I don't have any announcements even at this point.
And the next hearing is Monday?
The next hearing is Monday at 8:30 a.m.
Okay, super. With that?
In this room again.
In room 107. Wonderful.
Yep.
With that, have a great weekend. Meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.